Okay, hi, I am Brian Cardell. I'm a developer advocate at Egalia.
And I'm Eric Meyer. I'm the same.
And today we're going to talk about, I don't know, what do we call it? What about Interop 2.25K? I just wanted to do like the Madden 2K. Remember 2K when 2K was coming around? Everybody was like 2K. And for a little while, that was like really cool.
Yeah, Madden was like 2K3 or whatever.
Yeah, right. They did that for a long time, right?
So I guess this is Interop 2K25.
Yeah, okay. So we're announcing the Interop project for 2025. We have gone through the long and arduous process of getting, you know, the call for proposals and then discussing them and running them through our engineering teams and discussing them some more and, you know, ranking them and then trying to like figure out the economies of how all this fits together. Which things can we choose? What tests specifically go with them? Mm-hmm. Because that's, you know, what it ultimately is about. And and we're announcing what's in and what, I guess, not what's out, but what's right in.
And I mean, we've talked about that process in a previous Egalia chat, that some things don't get picked because the specification isn't done, and some things don't get picked because the specification is basically done, but there are no tests. And some things don't get picked because it's such a huge thing that not everyone can commit the resources. Like, there are a lot of reasons why things don't get picked. So, yep, today is all about the things that got picked.
Yeah. Do you have any order that you want to...
Anchor positioning is one of the big things.
The best one, yeah. It's the most exciting one of all of them.
Yeah, anchor positioning and layout. There's also a focus on layout, which is really layout interoperability, mm-hmm. to go back to the name of the whole project. It's a carryover from last year, and it's basically, you know, where there are inconsistencies in Flexbox or Grid or, I guess, any layout between browsers, this is still a focus area to fix those, to clear those up. But anchor positioning is new. And ideally, by the end of the year, we'll have very widespread, very interoperable implementations of, stuff that lets you do anchored side notes and little pop-ups and
I love it.
All kinds of sort of linking one thing to another thing, either visually or, it's all visually because it's CSS, but there have been demos people have done where there arrows that connect one element to another element, and no matter where you move the second element, like dragging it, the arrow just stays pinned, and it's all using anchor positioning. You can do that kind of stuff. You can do all kinds of really, really cool stuff with it. I've done some experiments with it in the past, and really looking forward to that being widespread.
Definitely. Then there's also the view transition API, which is huge. That's for same doc transitions. So that's like, you know, your single page app, you're kind of mutating the page. But that's interesting. I think a lot of people will be excited about that.
I hope that carries through not just for single page stuff, but also that the work that's done towards view transitions in Interop will have secondary effects of improving multi-page view transitions, because, you know, you have to do a lot of the same things between single page view transitions and multi-page view transitions.
I think it's only Firefox isn't supporting the view transition at all yet.
You think that's correct?
Seems to be.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Well, Firefox and Samsung Internet. I look forward to what people do with view transitions. And honestly, connecting view transitions and anchor positioning, you could do some really cool stuff. Mm-hmm. Honestly, view transitions is one of those things I want to see what people are doing with it about 6 months after it hits effectively baseline newly established.
Yeah. So,
because I think for the first 6 months, it'll be like really garish, over the top, crazy view transitions that we've never been able to do before. And then it'll settle down into people actually doing view transitions that are nice and, you know, useful and helpful to the user. You know, no shade on the first 6 months of garishness. It's just, I'm more interested in sort of what we settle into after that initial like explosion of experimentation that lots of CSS, you know, technologies go through when they first become widely supported.
Yep. Import attributes is in there.
Import attributes. Wait, is this called something else?
No.
Oh, is this modules?
Yep.
Okay. Sorry.
It's for modules. So that if you're in JavaScript and you want to import, but this is kind of funny because this goes back to, you know, like it seems like such a small thing, but it's been, I think 2017 or 18, something like that when this started. And it seemed like, sure. Just, you know, you always in Node could say like require this thing and it's just JSON. So, you know, JSON is JavaScript. So you just get it and it's, you have the thing, but it seemed like you should be able to just say, you know, import it as JSON, just like as JSON. We could just add the words as JSON.
Right.
And turned out that like that had like security concerns and web problems. And then there were, you know, bigger issues where people were like, well, but we also would like to maybe import CSS. So, you know, it went back and forth a bunch of times, but we're now in the stage where it's like, okay, we have like actually agreed and we have some implementation experience and we're pretty positive with this. So now we just put it in interrupt 2025. And by the end of 2025, it's going to kind of work everywhere. That's great.
That's the plan. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a number of JavaScript style things in interrupt. It's not all CSS or CSS. Mm-hmm. Adjacent. The navigation API got picked this year, which I was excited to see.
The one that surprised me was Core Web Vitals. So, you know, I always think of this as exclusively mainly a Google thing, but there are some specs that have been developed and APIs that are like largest contentful paint and interaction next paint metrics. These are like largest contentful paint and performance event timing APIs.
Yeah, Core Web Vitals is, I mean, it's basically Lighthouse, but for everybody, in my perception of it anyway. And it's Google's pushing this. And the idea is for the quality signals that, you know, Google Lighthouse has talked about in the past to be used, basically to be sort of tracked and communicated by the browser. So, you know, within the browser itself, it will tell you largest contentful paint. And there's a specification for determining how you calculate largest contentful paint. So yeah, that'll be interesting. It'll definitely be interesting to see where that goes in terms of how much it exposes to authors and developers and yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's, you know, it's just an API that lets you, you know, measure some timings and then you can collect those on your website and see how you did. And probably, yeah, there will probably be built in things in the tools as well that let you do that. What else is there? There is storage access API. Do you know anything about that?
I mean, some.
Yeah, I know very little, but it's very confusing because there's another one that, you know, has this history that goes like back and back and back. So it's like, you know, they're worth for third-party cookies and then like Apple got rid of them, but kind of
right.
And then Firefox also started doing some things and like Google was the only one that was left that wasn't kind of doing anything, but then, you know, like Apple had to make some adjustments, Google had to make some adjustments. So back in, I guess, 2017, I'm gonna say, the Apple had this like intelligent tracking protection thing and they helped come up with this. I think this has been shipped for like a long time now in some form in WebKit. And basically what it is it's a way to say, hey, look, there are use cases that really kind of need some of the interworkings that used to be just third-party cookies. but we need a way to kind of like lock it down. So it has to do with like, you know, you can put a iframe in your page and you can put a new, well, you can put like a sandbox attribute on it. And then through some, like it has to be at least some minor interaction. It doesn't currently prompt the user, I think, but it will allow you to maintain a cookie to the same site. So where this matters is like, let's say you're logged in on YouTube, right?
Okay.
And somebody embeds YouTube in their page and there's, you know, like a little thumbs up button or something like that. What happens when you click it? Like, are you you or do you have to log in again? You know?
Okay.
And so there's things like that where like you, like they're not getting any real information about you. You're not really getting any information about them. It's not leaking. Your cookies are your cookies. They're in their own cookie jar. But when they load their site in your frame, there's a way with this to say like, hey, this thing is okay. Right. So, it's a way to request that you have access to storage in the same site. So basically, you know, like YouTube can stay logged in even though it's in a iframe, which would normally be like its own. Does that make sense? Or
yeah, some. I mean, what it feels like is it's another attempt to make interacting with web services seamless even when you leave those services. And okay, I mean, as long as that can be done in a privacy and security respecting manner, I'm generally for it.
I mean, that's what it's really trying to do, is work out the privacy and security story, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, so you find this kind of tension back and forth all the time, I think, where there's like, but these things are useful, and it's like, yeah, but they're not safe, and so it's kind of this back and forth. Anyway.
Yeah. There were good. Yeah. And in the JavaScript land, there were also, there's some events things that are happening, like pointer and mouse events is an area that's going to get worked on. And the scroll end event, I guess, has some interoperability problems. So that's going to hopefully get worked on. But what I found the most interesting was one of the interoperability focus areas is to remove events from browsers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
the old mutation events.
Yep. The old mutation events like DOM subtree modified and DOM node inserted and stuff like that. Those have all been deprecated. The mutation observer API is what you should be using. And so the goal this year is to just take all of those old mutation events, the ones from before the mutation observer API, just rip them out of browsers. Like they won't be there anymore, which is unusual. I gotta say, it's not very common on the web for existing features to be removed. I'm not entirely certain how I feel about it, to be honest. That has the potential to break like old pages. And sometimes this sort of thing has to happen. Sometimes you got to take stuff out. You know, CSS removed a whole bunch of visited styling support because of the privacy and security concerns. I don't know that that's what the concerns are here, but just to remove events, to me, like the promise of the web is that it works both forwards and backwards in time. I'm always hesitant when there's a thing about, we're just going to tear these out. Like, we're not even going to legacy support them anymore. I don't know. What do you think?
I was surprised, honestly, that they still exist in browsers because they weren't even uniformly implemented in browsers. And I feel like I remember, like, I wrote a library back in 2010 or something like that, and maybe 2012, somewhere in there. And it, you know, monitored the DOM. And like everybody wanted to use this new mutation observer thing, and like IE didn't have it, so it was like very uneven at the time. But it was even all the way back then, everybody was like, this has to go. So it was like deprecated for like 12, 13 years at least. And when I look at it on Can I Use Now, it's like mostly deprecated. Like there's lots of stuff that doesn't work. So I'm pretty okay with this. I think it's pretty safe. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, I'm sure it's safe. I mean, this would not have been considered at this level without a whole lot of investigation of, you know, how often do we see these things being run in our browsers, you know?
Yeah.
It's certainly no browser at this point removes stuff just for the hell of it, right?
Yeah.
Or because it's like, oh, I really hate that. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that I think browser maintainers really hate, but that they still support.
Well, like vendor prefixes.
Yeah, you know, as an example.
As an example, which is relevant for Interop 2025, because
yeah.
There also is one for text decoration to remove the need for vendor prefixes when using text decoration CSS property and to make it interoperable across browsers. So that's cool, right? Because we said also around that same time, maybe 2009, 2010, something like that, we decided like this whole vendor prefix thing is a nightmare. Like we need to stop this. And everybody agreed, but we still use them too much. So
yeah.
What else do we have in Interop 2025?
CSS ad scope, which is pretty new.
Currently not implemented in Firefox, so we'll get that in Firefox this year.
That's the intent.
Yeah.
Also backdrop filter as a CSS property.
Yeah, somehow I missed that discussion. I don't know about backdrop filter. Tell me about backdrop filter.
Yeah, so I mean backdrop filter is if you have a dialogue or something that's sitting on top of other things, if you want to be able to, let's say, blur out the background.
Mm.
So the stuff that's behind the thing that you're styling,
I think.
That's what backdrop filter is for. You would be able to essentially say, don't apply any filter effects to this thing that I've placed in the middle of the screen. But within that area, I want you to apply these filters to the stuff that's behind this element. So you could like massively blur out whatever is behind desaturated or whatever.
Isn't the definition of behind like to the block, or it's like, cause like, you know, we have this concept of like top layer that is above all the Z indexes that are in normal page. And then I guess when you have like a dialogue, there is a backdrop. Is that what we call it? I can't remember.
Yeah. It's the stuff that's behind the thing that you're styling, like visually behind. Or maybe another way to put it is it's the stuff that the thing that you're styling overlaps and is below it or behind it.
Okay. It's like the whole page though, or
not
like
the whole page, just the part of the page that the thing that you're styling is in front of or on top of, or.
So can you only see it if there's transparency on your thing?
Correct.
Hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Your background needs to either be transparent or partially so in order to see whatever effect you have applied.
Interesting.
The MDN page for backdrop filter has some examples, like backdrop filter blur 10 pixels is one of their examples. But you could do all kinds of other stuff. You could use any of the filter properties. I think 90%+ of the use of this property is going to be to blur the backdrop, in all honesty. Maybe a few other things like also desaturated at the same time, but that would be my guess. This is just going to be, let's make it frosted glass blurry looking. I don't know. Maybe some SVG filters you could use.
Oh, you can use SVG filters too?
Yes, you can. So you could do backdrop filter URL blah and point at an SVG filter. So cool. That's probably most of the other 10% would be my guess of what this is used for. But we'll see. You know, designers constantly surprise me with what they come up with. There was also writing modes. We were talking about text decoration before. One of the things that we wanted was support for the sideways LR and sideways RL values. And they're not widely supported. So that's part of it. But there's also overflow inline and overflow block properties.
That makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah, totally does.
Yeah. Because we have all the other things that are overflow, you know, which way they're inline and block. Why not add them?
Yeah.
For overflow.
I think
I like consistency. I like consistency. So good job, us.
Yeah. I think these are also only supported by Gecko at the moment.
We'll get there. So.
It
made it in to interop. So,
yep. Other stuff. There are something about the details element.
So there's been all kinds of like improvements to the details element. So, you have like the hidden until found, which is like allows you to do in page search that will open up the summary details to show text in there if you set that attribute.
Okay.
There was there never was any parts really exposed correctly, you know, uniformly about how to style the parts of a summary detail. So like, what if you just wanted to style the content? Because like it uses this, like they call it like Scooby-Doo algorithm to like, how do you make sense of this element? I think like if a lot of people were designing it, you would have like two child elements, right? So you'd have like, I don't know, container element and then, you know, like a summary and then a details. Or maybe it would be two elements that follow one another, you know. But the way that it's designed, the details element is around the summary. And then everything that isn't the summary is the details. So what if you want to style the content of the details, you know, or if you want to style the little turny thing, how do you do it? Mm-hmm. So they're exposing some pseudo classes, like not pseudo classes, pseudo elements.
Right.
Detail content and marker and allowing you to display them more, you know, to style them better and more uniformly.
Okay.
And also the possibility to toggle the content using content visibility instead of display. So there's a bunch of interoperability things there. I think I'm not sure if we are actually interoperable on the like accordion treatment of details yet, but if not, I can't remember if those would be in this as well. But you know, I think the point is that details is about to get a lot better things a lot more uniformly, which is great.
Yeah. A thing of relevance to Agalia is WebRTC.
Mm-hmm.
We do a fair amount of RTC work.
There's I think an important thing in there is there's a thing to make the RTC data channels transferable to workers so that they don't have to run like processing of data on the main thread. I think that seems like a really good deal. And RTC RTP script transform, which this I'm just going to read because I literally don't know. It allows scripts to modify the media stream, which is commonly used to implement end-to-end encryption in WebRTC applications. So I'm sure that people on our team will be happy about whatever they have to do on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those things will be available in uniform.
I suppose we should have said WebRTC stands for Web Real-Time Communication.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Also, there are some things with WebAssembly.
Yep.
So, resizable buffers integration to integrate WebAssembly into JS code. And JS string built-ins. So, this is like when it's going to sound like I don't know WASM. And the reason is because I don't know WASM.
All right.
Well. But you know, as from my limited understanding, basically, when you compile your thing from C or whatever, you're using WASM, and WASM is like very low level, and as such, it kind of they didn't define any kind of like built-ins like you have in JavaScript. Instead, you import those with some glue code. And the trouble is that glue code, because these are primitives that you use like all the time, that glue code is kind of like expensive. Like it's not overwhelmingly expensive, but it would just get a lot more performance if you could just sort of like use them without this glue code built in.
Right.
And so they're introducing these basically parallels to things that are in JavaScript so you can use them directly. So you can do things like concatenate strings and basically most of the things that you do with a string API in JavaScript. You just do them directly in WASM.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Oh, we forgot about the URL pattern API.
Is it in there? I don't remember.
It is.
It's in there.
Yeah. Okay. It's on the list.
You want to talk about that?
No. I think you should.
Haha. Yeah, I mean, the URL pattern is, you know, it's useful for matching URL patterns. Lots of people, not lots of people. I mean, I don't think that many people write things that will use URL pattern, but if you use or you write like a router for your client side single page application or something, or maybe if this is like interoperable across even Node and everything, if you're making a thing like Express, you know, a web server, those would be really interesting and useful. Or if like Eric and I, you write a bunch of stuff that goes and scrapes websites and does interesting things.
Yeah.
Then, you know, it could be useful to you. So. Mm-hmm.
And then there's a catch-all, which is web compatibility, which you would think, isn't that the whole point?
Yeah.
But this is sort of where small, like, web compatibility problems got kind of dumped into a bucket. So, like, some of it's CSS, some of it's JavaScript. And so it's
like there are three failing tests in this browser for.
Yeah, right. Where there was a proposal like that, where it was, hey, this is 99% in all browsers except this browser, which is 94%.
Right.
Those kinds of things where making it an entire focus area didn't really make sense. Mm-hmm. So there are a number of those that are lumped in here, which is cool. And then there's the investigation efforts looking ahead. Some of those things are infrastructural when it comes to web platform tests. An example is that it's really hard to test some mobile support for things. Like, it's very hard to test support for touch events, like correct support for touch events. It's easy for a browser to tell you if it recognizes touch events at a code level, but is it doing it correctly? And how are you supposed to test that? So one of the investigation areas is mobile testing. Another one is accessibility testing. Like, how do we not just test for a browser recognizing a piece of code, but actually supporting it correctly and interoperably? Hmm. So those are two of the investigation areas, which they don't have sort of the same promise of we'll have things fixed by the end of the year. It's more, let's figure out if we can get things to a point where in a future interop, we could make that kind of a promise.
Yeah. And I mean, we do these because there's a lot of things that we can't really test super well, even, you know, like even accessibility is really hard to test in this scenario. So
yep,
you have to dedicate some time and effort and money in the end, because somebody has to pay people to do it, toward figuring that stuff out. So if we don't put it somewhere that we're going to do it, if we don't commit to doing it, then it's just never going to get done.
Right. Yeah. And a similar area is, there are some gaming related APIs, mm-hmm. like, there's one for gamepads. There's a pointer lock API and a screen orientation API. Again, the interop team felt we need to figure out how those could be reliably tested for interoperability. More and more gaming is web-based, and these APIs are meant to make it more and more possible to do basically native browser game development and deployment, sort of native JavaScript support for, you know, gamepads.
Mm-hmm.
That way, the developer can just use that API to say, okay, well, when this kind of an action happens, you know, when a primary trigger is pulled, then, you know, fire the missiles, and you don't have to know the specifics of every single gamepad.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, then the privacy, trying to figure out like what kind of tests could be written to test privacy related features. So I think it's going to be an interesting year for interop. And I don't know how you feel about it, but I think it's a nice mix of new stuff that has just reached the point of we can interop this, right? We can make this interoperable because the various questions have been answered and the debates have been resolved and, you know, there's a specification and when there are tests and we can go with this. And also, yeah, that stuff has existed for a while and we're close on being interoperable for the thing, but we're not there yet, quite. And this is the year that we want to get there. So
I'm really pleased with this effort. I know I've said this a few times, but like, one of the things that has been lacking, people imagine somehow that there is, you know, this coordination. The coordination is on like what we agree in words in a way. It's not in terms of prioritization and, you know, commitment and focus. And there's just too much stuff. And so like the thing that I like about this is like, it is an effort to say in a way that, you know, like we used to do with like, well, this is HTML 3.2. This is 4. This is 5. Like it's a way to draw a box around something and say, we could do other stuff too, but like, we got to focus on this stuff. Can we all agree to focus on this stuff? And I am pleased, especially last year, because I think it was last year we introduced the interop score, which is unintuitive, but I think it was a miss the first few years that we didn't have that, like a big miss for users. So just like to remind people, the interop score is like, let's say that there's 10 tests and like Safari passes, you know, 5 of them, and like IE pass, or you know, Safari passes 5 of them, Google passes 5 of them, and Firefox passes 5 of them. Mm-hmm. They're all passing 50%, right? But it's possible that you can have literally not a single test that passes in all 3.
Yeah.
So like with a small number like that, it's like kind of easy to imagine it, visualize it, and realize that, oh well, what have we accomplished here? Even if we get our score from 0 to 50%, the answer is nothing. You have accomplished literally nothing for users, you know?
Yeah. You have not accomplished anything interoperability wise. If the 50% that you implement is a 50% that either nobody else implements or that only one of the other two implement, you know,
yeah.
Developers are still stuck with, well, this doesn't work for all my users. So how am I supposed to use it? And yeah. So
somebody, I don't know, I want to say it was Jen Simmons, wrote a nice piece that was on the WebKit blog that was talking about this year's, like the success of this year's. And I think it talked about some of this and like,
oh, yeah.
What a real success this year was compared to previous years.
2024. What a success 2024's has been as compared to the earlier interops. Yeah.
And so I think we're kind of getting better at it. But yeah, I mean, this is, it's a really big deal to get this quality delivering new specs APIs that we focused on together, you know, anchor positioning, like popovers, nesting, scope, you know, all these things that we're getting, we're also focusing on them together and really trying to deliver something that is really quality. And yeah, I feel like that's been missing for a long time. And I'm glad that we're doing it. I mean, I wish we could do even more of it, but
yeah,
I think it's a healthy amount we're doing now.
What I am heartened by, I think, like you, is that it continues year over year. It's kept going. Like you say, all of these stakeholders, all these teams coming together and saying, okay, what can we agree on that we will all devote resources to? Whereas without that conversation, it would,
right? Then you're diverging. Yeah,
probably diverging. And it's also, I mean, one of the important aspects of it is that it is a place where these teams come together, coming together to say, this is what's important to us. And the other teams then learn that, right? They learn, oh, anchor positioning is really important to them. You know, we were kind of interested in it, but now that we know that, you know, other teams want to devote resources to this, that causes us to reconsider. Or for that matter, for teams to say, that is not a thing we can do this year. That happened in Interop. I'm not going to say, you know, which teams said for what things, but if I remember correctly, pretty much every browser team for something said, that's, you know, not something that we have the resources to tackle this year.
Yeah.
And that lets other teams say, oh, if they're not going to tackle it, I mean, in some senses, they could say, okay, well, then we are going to tackle it so that we look better. Or they could say, if that's not a priority this year, we could take whatever resources we would have devoted to that and place it elsewhere where we can be interoperable, right? And maybe this thing will be next year, whatever it is, right? Like just that kind of coordination, that communication between teams, I think is a real benefit and has the long-term effect of greater interoperability. Just knowing where the other teams are on these sorts of topics, I actually think gets us to interoperability sooner in the long term. Because if the flashbulb API, I'm just making a thing up here, but if the flashbulb API can't be worked on by one of the teams this year and the other teams say, okay, we're going to put that on the back burner for now, then maybe next year everyone says, okay, we put that on the back burner. Users and developers really want it. Can we tackle it this year, please? And then ideally, you actually get there sooner rather than the uncoordinated divergence that you were talking about where one team does the flashbulb API and then it takes other teams like years before they get there because they weren't really thinking about it.
I think if there's one thing that I would change, it's the thing that we talk about all the time and it's funding. I think Egalia would love to participate in a bigger way. We would like to be able to say in some of those conversations where like a team says, we just don't have the resources to work on this. We'd love to have the resources to say like, well, but what if you did? Because maybe we have the resources to do that, you know? So maybe a thing that we can think about in, you know, future years, if we keep doing this, is creating some kind of interop fund. If somebody out there listening has an idea and wants to start a fund, you know, work for companies that have a treasure chest or whatever hidden somewhere. Yeah, that would be great. And also if your thing didn't get picked, I guess, don't forget you can always fund some work in almost all these cases.
Very true.
So yeah, I think that's it. Interop 2025.
Here we go.